This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes, like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. So it is good to take the mountain when we don't know what else to do. When we are drawn to quests we know little about. This makes life and develops soul. In climbing the unknown mountain, we gain true knowledge of the instinctive psyche and the creative acts of which it is capable. That is our goal. Learning occurs differently for each person, but the instinctual viewpoint that emanates from the wild unconscious and that it is cyclical begins to be the only one that makes sense of and gives meaning to life, our lives. It unerringly informs us about what to do next. Where can we find this process that will free us on the mountain? On the mountain, we find additional clues about how to transform the hurt, negativism, and grudge-holding aspects of rage, all usually felt and often warranted initially. One is the phrase, Arigato Zaisho, which the woman sings to thank the trees and the mountains for allowing her to pass. Figuratively translated, the phrase means, thank you, illusion. In Japanese, Zaisho means a clear way of looking at matters that interfere with deeper understandings of ourselves and the world. An illusion occurs when something creates an image that is not real, such as heat waves on a road that makes the road seem wavy. That there are heat waves is accurate, but the road is not really wavy. That is the illusion. The first piece of information is accurate, but the second piece, the conclusion, is not. Welcome to 2026. Welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. As always, that was an excerpt from Women Who Run with the Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, PhD. And we are starting off this year, and I feel like this reading about going to this mountain and we don't know what's on the other side and facing illusions is a perfect introduction, as this book always provides perfect context for conversations. I'm calling this episode The Courage to Pause. And for those of you that may be new to Come to the Brink, this is the space where we gather in truth, where we speak the grief that lingers and honor the moments that shape us. We also explore what it means to live fully human in a world that often asks us not to. We're starting 2026 with a powerful conversation about grief, storytelling, and what happens when life asks us to keep going, even when everything in us needs to stop. Today, I'm joined by Deandra Ford Wing.
Hi
Deandra.
there, Zoe.
Hey. So this
Hey.
will be our second conversation. We had our first, was it last week or the week before we had our first conversation?
Yeah, it was the week before. Yeah.
And we just went on and on and on chatting. So this is going to be a great conversation. A little about Deandra. She is a writer, a speaker, and a thought leader whose profound journey through grief ignited her passion for storytelling. After the sudden loss of her mother, Deandra made the courageous decision to pause her thriving corporate career, choosing healing over momentum, reflection over productivity, and that decision became the seed for her book, Red Bird, a deeply moving exploration of loss, resilience, and becoming. So
That's
today,
me.
so let's get into a little bit more because I want to hear about sort of before we get to Redbird, I want to go back to the beginning. So you grew up as an army brat, constantly moving, adapting, living in places like Germany during your formative years. Can you talk about how that early life of movement shapes the way you see the world now?
It made my world bigger. That's the one thing I will say. I noticed that when I came stateside for the first time, when it was my dad's second tour in Germany, we came back stateside, back to my hometown of Georgia and in Albany, Georgia. And I just realized that the kids there were way different than the kids I was used to being around when we were stationed abroad. And not that they were any worse or any better than those kids, but they were a part of a life that was so much different than mine, in a smaller form than mine. I don't want to say small in the sense that their world was just like closing in on them. I mean, in the sense that they hadn't seen the world. And at that time, I was 8 years old, and I had already seen and been at London, Paris, everywhere at that point.
Wow, okay.
So it was really interesting to me to come back to the United States and just see just like the limited world view that the kids had stateside versus the kids, back home, I would say, in Germany. It's a little different.
So you say back home in Germany, were you born out of the country or were you born in the States?
I was born in the States by
Okay.
happenstance. My mom happened to be stateside when she was pregnant. She got really, really sick because I have a twin sister.
Okay.
And her pregnancy with us wreaked havoc on her body. It
Okay.
really did. She was confined to the bed for the last, 3 or 4 months of her pregnancy.
Wow.
So we'd actually moved back stateside again from Germany. My dad was in Wolf, and my older brother, older sister, parents came back from Wolf and went back to Georgia, and that's where she had us. Then we went back to Germany. So it's
Okay.
interesting. I was born in Georgia, in Albany,
Okay.
Georgia. Yeah.
Okay. But then you went back
Oh
there
yeah. Oh
and
yeah.
yeah. And so how much, so you were 8 years old when you came back. And when you came back, were you here for good?
No, I was
Okay.
not. So we ended up a couple of places. We went to El Paso, Texas, and Fort Bliss. So we were in Fort Bliss for about 3 years, went back to Germany. And we were in Osterholz-Scharmbeck, which is on the west side, close to Berlin. So we were there until I finished school. Then we came back stateside. And I finished my high school years in Texas on Fort Hood, which is now Fort Cavazos.
Okay. So,
Yeah.
how was it when you came back the second time when you were older? Did you see the differences even more or?
Oh, absolutely. And the weird thing is that most of the people that went to the high school that I went to already knew because they were, military brats as well. So that was a welcome. That was really quite nice. I knew most of those kids. A lot of them I didn't know. They were either stationed in Germany at one point or stationed in Fort Bliss at one point or Fort Stewart, Georgia. So most of those people, they understood what it meant to be the kind of kid that packed up and went. And didn't really lay down any roots. Like, I didn't have friends that I had since I was 5. That didn't happen. I had to make new friends every 2 to 3 years. And that actually freed my psyche up. It made me more open, more receptive to meeting new people and being being an extrovert, I think that really helped me propel myself forward. I was never afraid to speak. I was never afraid of anything because of that.
Did it help having a twin?
Yes, but we were separated when we were 5. So we were in pre-K together, a little bit of kindergarten, but the administration thought it'd be better if we were split apart. The hardest thing in my entire life. So in first grade, we were separated. And
What?
that sucked. Yes.
What?
They separated us
The
because we were so
school.
close. The school did. They thought it would be better if we learned apart and got to meet other kids and because we were a unit. We were a unit. Yeah.
So it was hard then, but did you see the benefit of it afterwards?
Absolutely.
You did.
Because it made me, I was so used to being a part of this unit and then seeing what it was like to just be my own separate entity was awesome. It gave me the freedom to develop my personality. Yeah.
Now, were you always a storyteller? Did you always have a thing for writing or
Always,
you
always. I
did?
kept a journal every single year of my life. And I went through some boxes a couple of days ago after you and I spoke, and I found my journals from when I was 17. It was so much fun to read through them. It was amazing. Like my first year of college, I had my journal from that. My first year in my 20s, I had my journal from that. And I just read all the things that I was back then. I'm so different now. It's like a whole new person.
Really?
Yeah.
How, what do you feel is one of the most profound changes?
Oh man, that I'm not scared of anything. When I was looking through my journals, I noticed that I had a lot of nitpicky things about myself that I really should have eased up on myself for. You know what I mean? I was really hard on me. And now I find that I give myself grace in a lot of spaces because I know that number one, I'm human. Number two, I'm going to make mistakes and I'm just going to continue to grow. That's all. But I was so very hard on myself as a kid. And I know that I suffered a lot with mental health when I was growing up. And I was always a little bit depressed and a little bit on the outskirts as I got older. Like into my teens, I was really kind of reserved. And that, I don't know why that changed. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Do you have like how do you make meaning of the of life? That changed, like the way you made meaning of things then versus now.
Back then, I thought I had all this time, that I had nothing but space and opportunity. Now I see that I'm, not in the twilight of my life. I won't say that I'm 46, but now I tend to look at things from a bigger lens. Like I don't want to do things that are not going to make me feel good. And I know that time on this earth is limited, and that's what losing my mom taught me. And I appreciate every single day that I have to breathe. Every single day that I wake up, I say thank you to no one in particular, to God, to the universe, to the ether. Thank you for allowing me to breathe this morning and wake up and do something productive with my life. And I never thought I'd be the kind of person, especially as a kid who was thinking I had all this opportunity in front of me. I never thought that I'd be in a place where I really.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces, Gucci bags, Prada heels, but my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal, game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
You really, truly appreciate what it is to live.
Yeah.
And that's what I do every day now. I appreciate the life I'm living.
Yeah. So thank you for that. So shifting into the conversation with your mother, her sudden passing definitely changed the trajectory of your life.
Yeah.
You made this radical choice to pause a successful career at a time when most people are told to push through. Can you take us into that, to that moment, which, I mean, just happened last year?
Yeah, I know. I honestly, the day that my mom died, where was I? I was in the office working. And to learn that I would be given up to 5 days to grieve my mom, I hit a wall going 95 miles an hour. I was incensed. I was upset. I thought, this is diabolical. I cannot, in good conscience, like, go back to work when I know that I have all this unpacking to do. I had just lost the woman that had been the center of my life for all of my life.
Yeah.
And I wanted to honor her. And I wanted to honor the grief and honor the feeling, the things that I was going through, just the ebbs and flows of the grief and all the sentiment. And just, I really, really had to do it for me. And I know what you said is important, the fact that I left a successful career, but I didn't even, I was like, it's time out for that. Who cares? Yeah. There'll be other opportunities.
Yeah.
I just said, who cares? I'm quitting. And I felt so good about it.
Yeah.
And the day that I called my boss and told her I would no longer be working with the company, she was like, are you sure? Do you want to take some time to think about it? And I was like, oh, no. I'm 100% sure. And I've thought about it. And this is what I need to do for me. And she was nothing but graceful. So I really appreciate that. And I really have to do it for me.
Yeah.
And for my mom.
Did you know immediately when they said, and how did they deliver that message also?
Okay.
Phone call, email, like.
No, I was talking to my boss one day. So this happened on a Wednesday. My mom died on a Wednesday afternoon. And my boss actually drove me home because I was in no condition to drive. Okay. Left my car at the office. She took me home.
Okay.
And she dropped me off and she said, call me when you have a moment to yourself, when you have a moment to go assess everything. And I'm like, sure. So I left my house with my husband after she dropped me off. And we went to my mom's house immediately. Did not pass go. We went straight there.
Yeah.
And I remember I got an email from my boss the next day. And she was like, I hope you're okay. Just wondering when you're going to come back to work. And are you kidding me? And I told her the next day, and I said, you won't see me for a while. I have to produce my mom's memorial. I'm delivering the eulogy. We have to make programs. We have to find a funeral home. We have so many things to do. We had so many things. You know how this goes.
I do.
And so I thought about it. And then a week later is when I delivered my message to her.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
The next day. And she knew what kind of state you were in because she brought you home.
This was a tragedy. And she knows it was. The way that it all unfolded.
Right.
I mean, me having to call 911 from my office to get them to dispatch EMS to my mom's house in a different town. It was so, so traumatic. Like, I never want to go through that again. Never.
Right.
Yeah.
So you did that. She was graceful.
Mm-hmm.
Great. and after being disgraceful, and then your novel, Red Bird, emerged from this season of grief. How did the book come into being?
Well, the day that my mom died, I went home Didn't know what to do. My husband just said, "What do you need?" And I just said, "I need to scream." He let me get it out. I did. And the next day, I woke up with just thoughts in on my heart. I have this journal that is intention setting. So it asks you a different question every single day. It prompts you to think about the things in your life that you may want to change or that you want to do differently, what you're grateful for. And the question that the book posed to me that day in that journal, it said, "What do you want to be remembered for?" And I just thought, you know what? What is my legacy? I don't know. I do not know what I want to be remembered for. And then I just started just free association writing words and just thinking about my mom and the way that I felt. And it started off, Redbird did, as a journal entry. And then I just kept coming back to it and coming back and coming back. And pretty soon it had enough of a thing to it that I decided that I was going to get it published and that I wanted to make it into something more, bigger, better for my mom. So I did that and I was. You know, it took me about 12 months, took me almost a year to finish Redbird. And then when I got it done, my husband was like, "Well, do you want to get it published or do we want to just sit on this or do you want to just, what are we doing? I think it needs to be read. It can help people." And I'm like, "Okay." So I, sent my manuscript to a couple of, big house publishers like Random House and Simon and Schuster. And of course, they get flooded with manuscripts. And so I was like, you know what? I can do this myself. And so I talked to KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, had a call with them, and they published my book. And it was great. I had an editor. I had them do the cover of it for me. I had an idea. They took it and brought it to life. And the rest is history.
Okay. And so it took you about a year to write it. And did you, so I, just timeline, did you start writing like right away? Did you give your
The day after she died. I had to. I didn't know how to shut off my brain. I couldn't sleep. I could barely eat. I was just drinking tea and water and just leaving it up to God at that point. I was just too done. I was done. I was emotionally spent.
And so what parts of the grief were you most determined to tell the truth about? Were they the parts that people kind of avoid, right? Brush past, or that they try to sanitize? Like what were you determined to tell the truth about?
Everything. I talked about my terrible aunts who swindled my granddad out of his retirement. I talked about them. I no longer have a relationship with those women, and I choose to keep it that way. I told the truth about that. I told the truth about my dad, who I have a very strange relationship with. I haven't talked to him in months. And I talked about the fact that my dad cheated on my mom and then tried to bring his wife to her memorial like it was okay. And I was like, no. We're not playing that game. So I talk about that. I talk about my attempt on my life when I was 24, because these are all the things that make me who I am. These are all part of my story. It's not just a grief story. It's a story of understanding who you are as a person and how you are equipped to deal with adversity. And that is what I really wanted to hit home. Yes, it's about loss. Yes, I lost my aunt. Yes, I lost my mom in close succession. But really, at the heart of it, this book is about resilience. It's all about that.
I love that. And you also said something really interesting, sort of in the beginning of our conversation in the little pamphlet that I have people, fill out or whatever when
Oh,
they
yeah.
first start. And one of the things you said was grief and bereavement are fundamental human experiences, yet they are often cloaked or outright erased in
Yes.
corporate spaces.
Yes.
Why do you think organizations struggle with grief
You know
or
what?
ignore it?
I mean, Zoe, it's so easy. I don't know why this is so complicated for corporate America to grasp. People are human. As such, we are in a position where we are thrust into situations that we did not expect, like death, sickness, health problems, what have you. I do not understand why it is often taboo or often unspoken in corporate America when it comes to someone losing a person close to them. Doesn't matter if the person's your mom, your great aunt Gertrude, your great uncle Bob, doesn't matter. Across the board, they don't know how to make this bereavement process one that's rooted in something that's human. So when I say that, I mean, they allot 3 to 5 days. That's across the board. Doesn't matter who it is. We need to get to a place where we have to take into account, okay, who was this person to this employee? How is this going to affect his or her psyche? And we need to take out the guesswork of trying to figure out, okay, well, people lie about deaths all the time. And this is where corporate America F's up. This is where they get it wrong. They put everybody into one little box and assume that just because you've lost someone, that it's not important enough to kind of dig deep and understand how this loss is significant to you. And they just have a blanket bereavement policy for everybody, no matter what. And I find that to be a little bit jarring and unfair. Really, I do, because this is a human emotion. It's something that we all have to go through. It's a lived experience that we all have to go through, and we need to treat it as such. And I don't know why it's so unspoken and so taboo. I just wish I could figure it out, but I can't. And I want to make some changes with that in the greater, larger system of this thing. It's just it makes me so angry when I think about all the people who are afraid to say, I had a death in the family. I need a couple of days off. I'm human. You need that time. It's respect. It's respectful. That's all I have to say. And there's a fundamental lack of disrespect when it comes to someone close to you dying.
100%. And I think I had shared with you that I've worked in places where it did matter through 2 days if it's a grandparent or something like that, or
That is wild to me.
4 days if it's a parent. You have to show some places, you have to show the obituary, or if you
Yes, I had
travel, you have
to.
to show the train or the plane tickets. So they wanted that from you as well, the obituary.
Well, the funny thing is, they didn't need it from me because guess why?
Because you quit.
No, because my boss and my boss's boss came to her funeral to honor her. Yeah, they did. I did not expect it. They showed up and I was like, wow. And that's what made me, that gave me pause when I thought about, what I ended up doing, which is quitting. But I had to, at the end of it, I really had to take it.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces, Gucci bags, Prada heels, but my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal, game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Take stock on what was important to me. And I think honoring my mom is way more important than anything else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
Yeah.
so you're saying people are human. Is there anything else that organizations need to understand about grief that they currently don't?
They need to take it by a case-by-case basis. Everybody's different. You can't have a blanket policy that you think applies to everybody because everybody's situation is different. Now, you may get someone who loses a parent, right? But their parent and her or him weren't close. So that to them, they'll take that 3 days and bereave or whatever they want to do. But it was so different for me because when I say me and my mom were close, I mean talking 5, 6 times a day close. I mean, like she was my person, she was my safe space. That was my mom. And I felt like the rug had been pulled out from under me when she left this earth.
What do you think a grief literate, because this is also a cultural issue,
Oh, for sure.
what do you think a grief literate culture could look like if you could create it?
If I could create a grief literate culture, that's a hard one because I feel like there's so many different ways I could go about this, but I guess I would start with just take the time that you need. A grief literature culture understands that everybody is different. They don't believe in a policy. I would scrap the policy out the window. That's just
Absolutely.
me
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
everybody's story is different. Take vacation. Do something else with that bereavement policy. Do something else with that. Add that into PTO. How about that? Give them extra days just in case some shit pops off. You know what I
I
mean?
do.
Because you never know. You just never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just scrap the policy altogether. That's what I say.
I feel like at my last job, shout out to the Women of Color Network, I don't think we had, Tanya will let me know, but I don't think we had a bereavement policy because,
That's ideal.
because at a certain point, Tanya just kind of scrapped everything. So there
I
were
like her.
that, yes, she will be on the show and I can't wait. There were no vacation days. Like when we first started, we spun off of a larger organization. So when we first started, it was like the typical, oh, you start off with 3 weeks or whatever, whatever. And then after about a year or so, she was like, this is dumb.
See?
I don't need people to call me to pretend that they're sick. She's like, do you have a day off? She's just like, if you need a day off, just call and say you're not well. You don't need to delineate and tell us everything that's happening
That's exactly
so that,
right. That's exactly right. She's got the right idea, this lady. She has the right idea. She
she
really
did.
does.
She did. She did. And it was the longest job I ever was. I was there for about 11 years.
Oh man. That's some good tenure.
And I started as a consultant and wound up being there for like, 10 or 11 years because I didn't
Wow.
feel like I was under surveillance.
Exactly. And that's what they need to stop doing, policing people. We are all adults, man. We are all adults. And if something is going left in my life, I will let you know if I need support. So scrap the bereavement policy. In fact, scrap every single what your friend did. Let everything go and let people take the time that they need. Have unlimited vacation and just let people take it. But you have to obviously set some parameters, not abuse it.
We had per
Parameters, set them, but pretty much unlimited, no matter, because anything can happen in this world, and you know that.
Anything.
Anything.
In fact, something did happen in 2020, right? And they didn't handle
COVID,
that
ding, ding,
right.
ding.
They
Exactly,
didn't handle
COVID.
that right. They handled that terribly.
It was a shit show. It was horrible.
And people are still grieving that. And
Oh,
we're
yeah.
still seeing like the mental health effects of that as well.
We are. We are.
And so you mentioned journaling. Were there any other healing modalities or practices that supported you while you were writing?
While I was writing, I did consult my cards a lot. I do read tarot. I'm really into it. I've been doing it for like 10 years. But what?
That?
We didn't get to it. We did not get to it.
We were
We
talking
did
about
not get to it.
everything else.
But I use the Rider-Waite deck. So it's my favorite deck. And I just do a simple three-card spread. Nothing crazy. I do present, future, past, all of those things. And I just figure out, how am I feeling in this moment? What can I get from these cards and what can they tell me? A lot of them pointed towards the direction of me making a change. And ding, 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 I totally did. I ended up doing this journey of writing this book and then going on my podcast tour, things I had never done before. I was completely just entrenched in podcasting for a very long, for the entire year of 2025. That's all it was. I was on 62 podcasts. And I did all that. And I still, at the time, I started the early part of 2025, I'd started a directorship at an MSP here in Austin. And
What is
I've been
that?
there, oh, a managed services provider for
Okay.
technology. So we provide technology solutions to medium and small businesses and some large public venues. So we do that, and I've been there ever since. And it's afforded me the freedom to do all the things that I love to do, like speaking to you,
Okay.
speaking to whoever I want to, and still doing my job and still having to just be accounted for. And I love that because I have this freedom, but yet I still have a great job.
Okay,
So, yeah.
phenomenal, phenomenal. And I love that you're a tarot reader, as am I.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am. I have like 60, well, no, I sold a bunch, so I think I only have like about 60 decks now.
I have three.
I had
Yeah.
over 100 during COVID, but I sold.
Oh my gosh. What were you doing with the 100 decks, man?
Read them. I would read them seasonally, and I would, I was pretty active on my YouTube channel during COVID, and so I would read seasonally. So, for example, we're in
Oh,
Capricorn
cool.
season, and so
Yeah.
I'm doing like, so I'm using my shadow decks now and like my darker decks, and then when we get into Aries
Ooh.
season, I'll use more like fiery decks. So I would switch them. I started out by
I
like,
need to do that.
yes, it's
Yeah.
that's how, yeah, but. Yeah, I'm looking at them all now. It's still too many. It's still too many.
60's a lot. 60's a lot, man.
It's a lot. But I love them so much, and I love that that was one of your modalities that guided you through the process. Okay, I need to know what the other two decks are.
Oh my God. So one of them, they're two of them are both Rider-Waite.
Oh, okay.
And then I have one, I cannot remember the name. It's like a Celtic one.
Oh,
Yeah. They have a
okay.
lot of Celtic crosses. And I got
Right.
it. Interesting story about that deck. I got it from a vintage bookstore.
Oh, I
I
see.
did. I saged them before I started using them. I was like, let me just,
Okay.
but it's very old. They're very dusty. And I love them. And they're kind of dark as well. The Celtic ones are very dark. So I do enjoy it. But I do have Rider-Waite and then that Celtic one. Yeah.
Yes, as we transition into a tarot card podcast. But I started, I mean, this is how it goes. I started with a very obscure, this Afro-Brazilian deck. I taught myself on this deck.
Oh, that's pretty.
And so it incorporates like African traditional
I
religion,
love it.
right? So I started with this, and then this other just like super weird deck, the Aquarian. Well, the Aquarian Tarot was my first deck, which was very strange. Then I went to this Brazilian.
Where'd you get the Brazilian one? I'm
I
just
got this at a
curious.
place called Namaste Books in Brooklyn. I mean, in Manhattan, New York.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's
I've never seen one like that.
yeah. So this
I've
is
never.
that with the
Wow.
cowrie shell and the how they do divination. But you see how obscure it is, right?
It's so interesting. And that's the Queen of Swords, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Oh, it is. It is. See, I
so
know
you have,
my decks.
period. So you had to, so it helped my intuition because it's just so unusual.
This is
This is the
unusual.
Queen of Wands. What does this have to do with the Queen of Wands? I mean, look at this.
I have no idea, girl. What
None.
is that? That don't have
Right.
nothing to do with
Nothing
nothing.
to do with nothing. So I had these obscure decks that I taught myself with, and then I went to Oracle decks, and I was reading those for a long time. And then in 2018, I want to say, I got my Rider-Waite deck. And
That's my favorite.
after reading for over a decade, I got it in
Aren't
2018, and I was like,
they so good?
I
The
was like,
Rider-Waite decks.
oh,
Yes.
that's why people. It's so easy.
It's so easy. It's so easy. I love that deck.
Okay, let me show you one more. I think you'll like this one if you've never seen it. I'm showing
Oh,
the
I've seen
modern.
that
Oh,
one.
you've seen the
Oh, that's
Modern
the
Witch?
magician. That's the magician on the
Yeah, I
front.
love the
Yeah.
Modern Witch because it's still Rider-Waite, but it's like way more
Oh, this is like,
diverse
yes.
bodies, diverse genders, more people of color. So I
Oh, I'm gonna
teach,
get that. Modern Witch, you said?
I teach with this one because it's still the Rider-Waite, but it's just more diverse,
That looks just like the
inclusive.
Rider-Waite to me. That looks
Yeah,
just like it.
it's just
Yeah.
more inclusive. So I love it. I love this
Okay,
one.
I love that. I'm
All
gonna get
right.
it on Amazon. I love
Okay.
it.
All right.
Okay.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started on
No,
cards.
I love
My
talking
favorite
about
thing
them
in the
though.
world. Yeah, it's my
Yeah, it's
favorite
my
thing in the
favorite.
world. So, folks, we also just want to take a minute. One of the things we know, so again, this podcast is about grief, but it is also about resilience, right? It's the
Yes, ma'am.
same thing. It's like, how do we heal? How do we allow ourselves to be shifted and changed? And how do we allow our identity to change? Who did you become on the other side of your pause?
Someone more bold. You know what? This year, 2026, is going to be my year of speaking.
Okay.
So I joined a speaking like lab, if you will. And so we're working on my everything to pitch me for speaking at universities, colleges, corporate events, things like that. I just want to impress upon especially people in the university space, what it looks like to be a 40-something old woman, and then you're hit with all of these things, corporate America, losing your mom, figuring out your career, and getting through all of it and still coming out strong. So my hope is that I'm really, really focused on speaking to people who don't necessarily know what emotional intelligence looks like yet. We're talking about 20s, early 20s, 18-year-olds, things like that. I want them to understand that life happens. And when it does, you cannot fall apart. You have to persevere.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to share my story just because I think it's something that it's not like a novel idea. I get that. People lose people every single day. But for me, it affected my life in such a profound way that
Yeah.
I had no other option but to change. And
Yeah.
I think I changed for the better. I really do.
Yeah. What did you have to let go of to allow the version of you that you are now to emerge?
Fear. I have to let go of fear and not being accepted. Because who I am is who I am. And if you don't like it, tough. I hate it. I hate it for you. But I'm gonna keep it on because that's what I do. But I had to let that part of me go. Like the judgment, the fear of judgment, all the fear things that you can think of, fear of failure, fear of defeat. I had to let the fear go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's making me think about how people say, like, I'm unbothered by this, I'm unbothered by that. And in
I'm
some ways
always
it's
bothered.
important. Yeah, in some ways it is important, right? To be kind of unbothered, like as you're talking about being accepted and things like that. And I want to offer to the people that are listening to ask themselves, where might have you been asked to carry your grief in silence? And what might it look like to stop pretending that you're unaffected? Because in a
Yeah.
way, asking people to return to work or to get back to normal after a global pandemic or something is kind of asking us to, just kind of
Get
tweak
over it.
things and, get over it, bounce back. You know, all of those things in our time frame, not in your time frame, in
But
sort
in hours,
of
yeah.
hours, right? Whoever the hour is. And so I just want to ask folks to just think about that, right? Like, what might it look like to stop pretending that you're unaffected by things? And understanding there's no right answer, just noticing is enough.
Yeah.
So before we start to round out the conversation, is there anything you want people to know that I may not have asked?
You know, at the end of it, at the end of the day, the year, the week, what have you, we're all human. And I think that in spite of the conflict and adversity that most of us face, If you come out the other side with even just a fragment of humility, of just graciousness, you will be rewarded. I feel like having a good attitude, having the right people around you, and knowing how to kind of disperse your grief, throughout your life is not hard. But for me, what sucks about grief is that it's ever changing. It's something that doesn't stay stagnant. It's not something that you can look at one day and say, okay, I know what grief looks like today. So that means that tomorrow it's going to look like this and I'm set. I know what I'm. No, it's not like that. Every freaking day is different. Like I'll listen to a song and just bawl for no reason with no connection to my mom, but the lyrics remind me of her and I'll start crying. And that happened to me the other day. I cried for 5 hours straight. I could not get it together. And nothing happened. No big moment. Nobody ticked me off that day. I just missed my mom. I just, in that moment, missed my mom. So, what I would tell your listeners is that you might have days where you're sailing through life and everything is copacetic, everything is good. And then the next, you are knocked on your ass because you remember what you've lost. And that's a hard truth. It really is.
Do you feel like it's making me think like there were some shows that I was watching earlier this year of parents passing, of parents having cancer, and I would just find myself weeping, or I would see my sister, my god sister, and I talked about this when she was on the show last year. I will, and still sometimes now when I see like daughters with their moms,
Oh, I can't do it anymore.
if they're older, if they're, it just makes me think about like that. But I was thinking like I watched something last week and I was like, oh, I didn't like break down watching this thing on TV. So I also think it's important to like also celebrate those small things too. Like celebrating
Small
breaking
wins.
down, but then also celebrating like the small wins, like,
Yes, girl, I agree with that. Because if a week goes by and I'm not crying, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna get some ice cream today.
I
You
know.
know what I mean?
I know. I'm like,
Give myself a little sweet treat.
it feels good. It feels good to kind of be quote unquote getting to the other side. I know there's no true getting to the other side, but it's like, oh, okay, I want to take care of myself. I want to take dance classes. I want to juice. I want to do smoothies. Like, I'm doing all those things now. Like, little things to like take care of myself.
Yeah, I feel that. And what you said, really, you just said something. I don't know what you just said, but it just reminded me of this phrase. There's no finish line when you're grieving. You'll have a stop and a start, and then you're starting all over again and stopping and starting, and there's no finish line. You're just always going to be running this marathon of grief. Always.
And I, is there a lesson that grief has taught you, or that you're
Oh my
still
God.
learning?
I'm still learning. Actually, I think I did learn this lesson. Cherish the ones that you love. I learned that. And my siblings and I have gotten that much closer. We were already close, but now it's obnoxious. Like we're like annoying each other because we're so close. And I really think my mom's death kind of put that into motion. She always talked to us about, you guys, you're all each other has. You better maintain this relationship when I'm gone. She always said that. One thing that she taught us is that we are all we have. We are each other's best friend. And I appreciate my mom so much for that. I appreciate her for that. Because she hit that point home. And I see why. I see why. Because she did not have that with her sisters. And they're just terrible human beings, period. But except for my Aunt Sean, but they were close. Those two were close, but the other three,
I get that. That's another conversation.
That's another podcast, child.
100%.
You already know.
Oh, I know.
I know you know from personal experience.
Yeah, I feel like I probably talked about it on the first three episodes
Are you
for
serious?
the podcast.
Dang it. Oh my God, I
Think
might be on
so.
that
I
podcast.
think I talked about it on the first three episodes of the podcast. I really went into family
You went
stuff.
in. You went in.
Hardcore. Yeah.
Good. Good for you. That's your truth.
Well, I feel like there's something that happens when your mom dies that so does the
Yeah.
pretense. It's like
Preach.
I only showed up to things because my mom was older and those things were important to her. She's gone. I don't have to do that anymore.
Word.
I don't have to do that anymore.
You said a word, girl.
Yeah. I don't have to be around people I don't want to be around anymore. I just blocked somebody yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Oh, ruthless. Golly.
Maybe I'll take that part out.
Blocked somebody yesterday.
But you know what? I did because I was like, you don't like me.
Yeah, right?
Why are you surveilling me?
Ma'am, that is 100% the business. Yes. Yes.
Small wins.
Small wins.
Small victories over people pleasing.
You know what I mean? I would rather just have a small victory than people please my way into hell. I'm not
Yeah,
doing that.
no, I'm not doing that anymore. It's ridiculous. So I always ask, what are you grieving and what are you grateful for today?
Oh, I'm grieving my mom every day. Nothing changes. I'm grateful for my husband, my two dogs, my quiet life, and I'm just grateful for it.
Okay.
That's it.
And how can people support you and your work, your books, your speaking, your advocacy? Like
Yeah.
how can people support you? What's your social media? Like all that good stuff.
Yeah, so my website for my books is Deandra, I'm sorry, booksbydeandra.com. Very simple, booksbydeandra.com. And then my speaker website is going to be deandraspeaks.com. It
Okay.
is not up yet. It will be next week, so please don't yell at me. You can also find me on Instagram. It's Deandra Ford Wing, all one word. I'm the only one on Instagram. That's my handle. And then the same goes for LinkedIn. It's Deandra Ford Wing, all one word, LinkedIn. That's me.
Perfect. Well, the good news is by the time this airs, your website will be up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ding,
Yeah.
ding, ding. It's a
Deandra, thank you so much for your honesty and for your courage and for again just reminding us that, you know, there's no finish line to grief. Wherever we find ourselves in this process, it is the perfect place to be.
Yes.
And for our listeners, if today's conversation touched something in you, which I'm sure it did, if you're navigating grief at work, in your body, or in silence, send me a message, drop a comment, record a voice note. You all know I said it in my 2025 wrap up. I love hearing from you all. I love getting your reflections and just know your story belongs here. If you have something you want to say, your story belongs here. So, next time on Come to the Brink, I am going to be talking to someone that I've known for a very long time, and her name is Erica Totten. Erica is a personal coach. She is the founder of Liberation Wellness for Black and BIPOC women, femmes, and non-binary folks. We are going, she also talks about grief. She talks
Oh.
rest, pleasure, healing your nervous system, and she recently relocated her family to Mexico. So I really want to hear how her life in Mexico is going. I think she's probably been there now. My goodness, you know, we might be, I think she's been there for almost 10 months. Maybe a little shorter. So, yeah, I'm super excited to talk to her. It's going to be a great conversation. Hopefully, she'll talk to us about getting residency because she got residency in Mexico, I want to say, in about 2 months. And so, and I reached out to her because she was on a hammock looking sun-kissed. And I was like, girl, Mexico looks good on you. Please come on the show and talk about it. So I'm really, really excited to hear what she has to say about that. And thank you again for joining us. As you know, new episodes drop every Tuesday at 7:11 Eastern Standard Time, 7:11 a.m., with bonus episodes dropping on some Fridays. Of course, you can listen to us on all podcasts, wherever you connect to them. And remember, none of us should be standing on the brink alone. I am Zoe Flowers, and I will talk to you all soon. Bye.